Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Green 19 podcast, coming in from Lambeau Field, where the Packers win their first home opener, winning 16-10 over the Indianapolis Colts. I'm Dominic Yates. Joining me are Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. You go into this game, I'll start with you, Spoon. Everyone knew the Packers would run the football, but still to watch them execute the way they did, even Malik Willis' debut and all, just how impressed are you with the fact that the Packers were able to get the job done? I guess style points don't matter. They were able to get a win.
Well, it seemed like everybody but the Colts knew they were going to run the ball because I don't know what happened to their defense. I mean, I know it's not great, but their defensive front was supposed to be the strength of their defense. And for the second week in a row, they just got, you know, it's inexplicable how they got run on. Now, Willis had a little bit to do with that. I think they threw in a lot of, college-style fakes and counters and all kinds of sleight of hand, and he was pretty good at it. You know, he showed that that's something he can do. It's not sustainable. It was a great day running the ball, and I don't know if there will be another time in Matt LaFleur's career that he runs it 53 times. But it was the right thing to do today as we sit here on Sunday and discuss it.
Well, your prediction, Ryan, you had the Packers winning this game. Is this about how you thought it would kind of play out?
I think I had a 20-16 and what it ended up being 16-10. So somewhat, you know, low scoring. To me, the reason I had that just gut feel through the week is that good teams find a way to win games and bad teams find a way to lose games. And the Colts are a bad football team. I have no idea how they'll end the season. Anthony Richardson's a young quarterback with talent. We saw last year, Jordan Love was a young quarterback with talent and got better. So who knows how the Colts will end the season? They are a terrible, embarrassing football team. What they did today was relegation-worthy embarrassment. The Packers had 164 rushing yards on 20 carries in the first quarter. That hasn't happened in a game since the Denver Broncos had 167 rushing yards in the first quarter in 2011. We saw things that hasn't happened since Tim Tebow was a quarterback today. That's what we saw. It was incredible. I think the Colts knew that they were going to run. They just couldn't do a dang thing about it. And that's the embarrassing part of it. Because, of course, like Gus Bradley said earlier this week, they're preparing for Malik Willis. The Packers try to play this game of maybe Jordan Love will play, which I heard in the locker room was, you know, even internally, there was some thought that Jordan Love might have a chance. He was trying to get back for this game. It always seemed like a long shot, but what Elgton Jenkins told me was the idea of this game plan, why it was smart, was because regardless of who the quarterback was, they were going to have to run the ball a lot. Jordan Love, with the knee, if he did play today, they were going to protect him by running the ball. So this was the game plan, regardless of quarterback. The Colts knew that. They couldn't do anything about it. And I'll tell you, the offensive line today, the juxtaposition of this game where they had to run the ball 53 times in the second hottest game ever at Lambeau Field. I think in my story today, I broke a record for how many different ways you can say the word vomit. Up, chuck, throw up. I mean, you saw vomit all over, including on the football before a 3rd and 10 with 5 minutes to go in the second quarter from Josh Myers. It was a persevering type game. The offensive line punished the Colts as they persevered through punishment. And ultimately, it's a game that good football teams learn how to win. And I think this Packers team is a good football team.
That's the epitome of leaving it all on the field. I got my bad joke out of the way. Spoon, what was it that bad?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Okay, fair. What do you make of Malik Willis's performance? He hasn't played a whole lot of NFL football. 3 career starts as a rookie when he was with the Titans. He's been in Green Bay all of 3 weeks, but to manage the game the way he did, threw some nice passes. There's some passes that during times, he haven't seen that a lot in his career. What did you make of what Malik Willis did out there?
Well, what they did was limit him to very simple routes on the tree. And, you know, what he threw a nice ball to Dontavian Wicks that if he doesn't put that kind of gas on it, it's returned for a touchdown. But he put the right gas on it, you know, and Wicks did everything after that. The ball to Dobbs, you know, I was talking to one of the Indianapolis writers, and he's like, you know, Dobbs, goes and makes that play, and Michael Pittman has the same similar play with Carrington Valentine, and he doesn't go and make the play. So, you know, the strength of the Packers team is still their wide receivers. And if Malik Willis has to play again, I mean, you could bet that the Titans will have everybody on the line of scrimmage and make him throw. So it was pretty funny because I was asking receivers in the locker room, like, how many passes did you catch during practice this week? You know, and that, Dontayvion Wicks was had to think about it. You know, like, I bet it wasn't more than one. And they just went all in on this game plan. And I think that was smart. But now they better be ready to pivot in case he has to play again. I do think there's a chance Jordan Love plays this week. He apparently had a really good rehab week. I still think he was out the whole week. But, you know, if he's not back, then they got to get Willis in tune with some of these receivers or they're not going to win a winnable game down in Tennessee.
That is true because defensively the Titans, you could argue, a little bit better, especially, you know, Jeffrey Simmons and that front line is a very solid group. So it will definitely be more of a challenge regardless. I do also want to look at the defense. As a whole, last season they had 7 interceptions. So far through 2 games they have 5. Talk about a huge addition with Xavier McKinney, Eric Wilson, Evan Williams at the end. You had guys that stepped up and made plays, made it difficult for Jonathan Taylor throughout the game and Anthony Richardson. From week 1 to week 2, you saw the game in Brazil, both of you all did. Just what did you see from this defensive unit? Did you see a step in the right direction?
I think the one thing they didn't do defensively is make it difficult for Jonathan Taylor. He had 12 carries for 103 yards and 8.6 yards per carry, but he wasn't on the – is that right? He wasn't on the field at all in the fourth quarter?
I don't know if it's the whole quarter, but certainly in that, what, 4-minute drive when they were going down there, he wasn't on the field.
I mean, what is that? Yeah, the Colts, the one thing they had going for him is that the Packers couldn't stop Jonathan Taylor, and then so – I think the run defense has to be better, okay? That's the one negative because the defense held its end of the bargain today. It forced them to 10 points. This secondary is entirely different than it was a year ago. A year ago, they had 7 picks. They couldn't take the football away. It was the second fewest in the league. They got, what, 5 picks through 2 games? What a difference having an actual quality safety on the back end makes, and I get that Xavier McKinney had about the easiest interception you could ever hope for. It was the equivalent of catching a pop fly for Anthony Richardson because they actually got pressure on Anthony Richardson on the play. Anthony Richardson's thrown off his back foot. He just pops it into the air. Xavier McKinney could have fair caught that pick. But how many times have we seen Packers safeties over the past few years not make the gimme play, not hit the layup? Go back to San Francisco in January, early in that game, Brock Purdy throws it right at Darnell Savage for a pick 6, and it hits his hands like a brick. Over and over again, we've seen Packers safeties not make that play, and he does, and it potentially takes points off the board because the Packers are backed up defensively at their own 40. The Colts were in their territory, and it kind of changed the momentum early, which is what they had to do because when you have – and we talked about this during the week – when you have a backup quarterback, all those simple plays – have to be made. So they did the job. They've got to tighten up the run defense. I'm sure that they're going to look at the film, not be happy about that. But defensively, this is much better performance than week 1.
Same question.
They should have had 4 interceptions. Quay Walker can't catch anything to save his life.
I think that's just a trend at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he had the one in Chicago that he returned. But how many have we seen go off? I'm going to go back and look and come
Atlanta,
up with a number.
The next week, right? The week 2 of last season, Atlanta and on.
Yeah. So I think what has been interesting about this defense is, like, I don't know that we've seen it really because these past 2 weeks, all they've asked Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith and Anik Bari and who am I forgetting, Van Ness, to do is just rush outside and make sure the quarterback doesn't get out. And, you know, Rashawn Gary didn't have a stat today. And Preston Smith had 1 tackle. Van Ness had an assist tackle for loss. And Anik Bari had, like, 1 tackle. I want to see what it's like when they let them go, you know, just go after the quarterback and blow up the you know, the backfield. That's what this defense was supposed to be about. That's what we were told. They go upfield and do it. I guess it worked today. It worked, you know, for Richardson. They did give up a lot of running yards, but they held Richardson to 204 yards, a 41.8 rating. So you can't argue with that. But again, it's just like the offense. It's like, okay, now, you know, you made all these sacrifices for running quarterbacks. Now let's see what you can do with your real offense or defense. You know, let's see what that really looks like.
I guess what still is intriguing about this team, through these first two games, it feels like they've just left so much on the table. It's like, imagine what happens if they can put it all together continuously for four quarters. It is week two, so they still have a lot to work on. But I do think big picture, it does at least show the potential of this group because, again, a backup quarterback stepped into this game in a difficult situation. They find a way to get wins. The NFL is a mess right now, basically. All the games up and down. Ravens have lost games, just so many others. It at least shows that the Packers early on has the potential to be one of those teams that are in the mix.
Well, I think the one thing in the league that might be rarer than a franchise quarterback that can give you a chance to win each week is a backup quarterback that can actually give you a chance to win. That backup quarterback you can win with is rarer than a good QB1. I mean, there's just so few of those. And Brian Gutekunst found one. I mean, it was a seventh-round pick. He traded to the Titans. He found a guy in Malik Willis that can give you a chance when you're supposed to have no chance. Because you don't have your quarterback in this league, you have no chance. I mean, it's just so incredibly rare. So it's a special thing that this team now – and what do we talk about all training camp, Spoon? All training camp, they don't have a QB2. If Jordan Love has an injury, this is a problem. Well, it's less of a problem now. It's still not great. It's not what they want. But it's less of a problem now to the point where – and I'm with you. I think there's a real chance Jordan Love plays next week in Tennessee. But it's not the end of the world. It's not the worst thing. It's not a catastrophe if he doesn't, which is an awfully good thing early in the season to be able to have some flexibility, have some options. Malik Willis played really well today. He was efficient. It wasn't just the stat line, 12 of 14, finally, even first time in four career starts, having over 100 passing yards, the touchdown on third and four, a really big-time throw to Dontavian Wicks on the out route. But it was the decision-making. Like, I thought maybe one of his best plays of the entire game was the play that Josh Myers threw up on the football, a third and 10, where a young guy in that situation – maybe it's a good thing that Josh Myers did throw up the football because that's what Malik Willis told Matt LaFleur why he didn't throw the ball, and that's because it had puke on it. He wasn't going to give it to a receiver. Maybe that's a good thing, but, like, let's take the vomit aside. In that situation, a young quarterback wanting to make a play, third and 10, just over midfield, how many times do we see that guy force something? He just took a three-yard run, lived to punt, which was a winning play in that situation because Daniel Whelan was incredible today, and pinned the Colts back at the eight. That, to me, showed a lot of poise, a lot of composure. It was the type of poise that you'd expect from maybe a Jordan Love in that situation. Don't force it. Just live to fight another play. Keep yourselves in good position in the field, and that's what they did. He operated very well. He's very efficient. I thought it was very impressive today.
To bounce off that, though, Swin, what more do you want to see from this group, even though it's still early, heading into just, you know, next Sunday in Nashville?
Well, I think if you force Willis to have to pass, I still think he's gonna lean towards one read and go, you know. And I saw that a couple times. He had some pressure up the middle once, and he went right. And I'm thinking to myself, this is when Jordan Love tries to find some guy who's just separated in the end zone, keeps his head up, you know, is looking, and Willis just goes. And I think that's who he is for now until they can, you know, really retrain him to go for those kind of things because he's got to have trust in his arm. He's got a really good arm. He has to have trust that he's seeing everything. A team that can stop the run or at least limit it and put all the pressure on him, then we'll see. You know, I don't think it would be as good as it was today. You know, he had, you know, when you're running the ball like that, you're slowing the pass rush down. You know, the corners are falling asleep. You know, everything went perfect for him, I think.
I think the one thing that he does give you, especially when comparing to what we saw all offseason with Sean Ryan and Michael Pratt, the athletic part of it. You know, the couple times that there was pressure back there, he was athletic enough to make a play, buy time, break a sack, and then go find something positive without it looking like it was a panic or a rush. You know, that was just a very natural thing to him. And obviously then in the designed run game, that gives Matt LaFleur flexibility and options when it comes to crafting a game plan around him. He can do both. You know, he doesn't just have to be a drop back guy. He can run the football and be a playmaker with the ball in his hands. That's a good thing. So I think just on he's been here 3 weeks, and there's not much of this offense he knows right now. He's going to be a one-read guy until that happens. He'll be a one-read guy if he plays next week because he just doesn't know the offense that well, because how can you in 19 days? But that one element of the athletic component that Sean Ryan – excuse me, Sean Ryan – Sean Clifford and Michael Pratt don't have, that's a big difference to me.
Well, Braden Narveson, he went 3 for 4, and once again, a second straight week where he missed the field goal. Again, 45 yards, I think, was the one that he missed. So what do you make of it?
Well, I think – to me, Packers special teams right now in general is one extreme good and one real question mark in the kicking. I mean, I get that not every kick's going to be made, but for Braden Narveson to miss two kicks under 50 yards to start the season, both wide right, one hits the upright, and the other in week one against, you know, Philadelphia from 44 yards today, 45-yard wide right, that's got to get better to me. And I think it'll be very interesting. I'm not saying that he should be at the end of his rope by any means, but we've seen a GM here, Brian Gutekunst, that acknowledges he's not very patient with specialists. He's not very patient with kickers. And here you go out and you have two misses done on very makeable kicks that need to be made, should be made. Didn't hurt him today, but not how the Packers would want to script the introduction to a new kicker. They would have liked these easier kicks to be made. So I think that's a concern. On the other hand, Daniel Whelan, my gosh. I mean, for the first time ever, I think, I mentioned the putter in my quick gamer. I've never done that before, but Daniel Whelan, cast a vote for him for MVP. He was as good as any player on the field today on either team. Three punts is all he punted, but they were perfection. I mean, the first one, he downs it. It was about 40 yards, he downs at the 8-yard line. The second one, he kills the football, changes field position, 59 yards downed at the 16. And then needing to seal the game at the end, he downs a punt at the 5-yard line. That's as good as we've seen Spoon punting the football. I mean, when's the last time you saw that?
Yeah, it's been a while. Tim Mastay had a year where I thought he was the MVP of the team. He punted so well. He did have a big game. You know, it was a perfect atmosphere, just like it was in Brazil, to punt and kick, which is why, you know, Narveson doesn't have any excuses on that kick. He pushed it to the right. But they're going to cut him some slack. I mean, Gutekunst already said that, and I think he said it to take some pressure off him. Like, just go kick, you know. I'm going to have more patience with the kickers than I've had in the past. And the one thing you can see is that he's got a very powerful leg. I haven't seen him really mishit a ball, I don't think. Everything's pretty solid. Timing's pretty good. So, yeah, he's going to miss some field goals this year. You know, I don't think he's going to hit 85% of his field goals this year, and they're just going to have to live with that and hope that he hits the really big ones when they need him. But in this game, it could have hurt him. It could have. If the Colts go down and score right after that, that's a huge momentum change, just like it was for the Eagles in the Eagles game.
Yeah, but say if he made that one, the Packers would have won 1 point if he had made the one that he missed. So it is a game of momentum, but at least for the most part, there was a lot of complimentary football that was played, and you mentioned the punting. Just again, it was just one of those games where you needed more good to come together than bad, and they were able to catch some of those breaks that in some situations, maybe in the past, you could say they don't get those breaks.
At what point do you think it's a problem? I mean, it's not a problem right now. I'm with – I agree, Spoon. I think right now, week 2 going into week 3, you can give a certain amount of leash and patience, and you know, if you believe in the talent, you give that a chance. But it's not great either. Like, let's just call it what it is. Missing kicks under 50 yards in this league on a week-to-week basis is not ideal. That's not good. You need to make those kicks. This is professional football. You have to make them. At what point is that a problem, especially when you bank in the psyche of this team? I mean, the reality is, at the start of 2023, they've gone from long 3 decades of very stable kicking situation, obviously Mason Crosby on the tail end of that, to all of a sudden, makeable field goals that you usually routinely see made are no longer routine. And it's just kind of continued there.
Yeah. I have a question about special teams. Does anybody watch kickoffs anymore?
No.
I've got my head down. I don't even, you know, like, you know, sometimes I just wait for the ball to be placed at the 30. What a bad, bad move it is. And finally we had something exciting with an onside kick. You know, they declare for the onside kick, and then it was a lousy kick. Yeah. Right. I mean, right to Evan Williams. I mean, he made the right move on it. But, man, am I sick of that. Fine. Just take it out of the game. Just put it at the 30 for every team, because it's really a waste of time.
This is the equivalent to me to in baseball several years ago now, when the intentional bases on ball, they stopped having to throw 4 pitches, and they just said, you know what, go to first base. Just walk. Save the time. Save the lining up. Save the shenanigans. Just go. Because, Don, we were talking about it during the game, like, you know, the kickoff, I'm like, there's not a kickoff anymore. It's just, it doesn't exist. You kind of see, I think, why the Packers voted against it. I think Rich Bisaccia had an idea that this was just going to be phony. It was going to be stupid. And now I would imagine that a chiseled veteran, longtime, kind of maybe a little crusty special teams coordinator doesn't want to devote an entire offseason to something that's going to be absolutely bogus in the game. And not, I mean, I would vote against it too. The vote makes more sense now.
They should have moved the touchback to 35. Then I think 35, 40 would be a little bit too long, but 35 would make people think about whether they're going to kick it out of the end zone. 35's, you know, that's good field position. 30's, you know, okay. It's good. You know, you like 30, but 35, I think, changes a lot. You know, teams can go 60 yards, 65 yards a lot easier than they can go 70 or, you know, 80 when it went to the 20.
I was wondering if it needed to be the 40 only because it's almost like the method of, you know, boiling a frog to death slowly, right? Like when you're just increasing it by increment 5 yards in an off, I don't know that seems like a lot. Well, you got used to the 25, 30, that's no big deal. You get used to the 30, well, 35, that's only 5 more yards. You go from like 30 to 40, that's more of a drastic change. So if that's what you really want to do, the slow increments, I don't think it really registers that much when you get used to a certain touchback position.
Well, they had a chance to change it before the season started. You know, the owners met on it in August, and there was supposed to be talk about, okay, you know, we've seen it in the preseason. Nobody's returning anything. Move it to the 35, and then it changes. And then if you need to do it the next year, 5 more. But they really should have moved it in August because, you know, they should have been able to see this coming.
Yes.
I think we all did, didn't we?
Yes, because like you said, no one's even paying attention anymore during kickoff. So anything else, guys? Any final words or comments, remarks, anything moving forward? Obviously, we'll talk more about the Titans later on in the week and just that game prep, but everybody good?
Yeah. I thought that it was pretty critical that the Packers win one of these 3 games to start.
Absolutely.
Without Love, assuming they don't have Love. When they get to Minnesota, they absolutely have to win that game. But there's a little bit of leeway with some AFC games, 2 AFC games. You know, even if they're 1-2, I don't think it's the end of their year. Detroit lost an NFC game at home today. So I think, you know, winning this game took a lot of pressure off Matt LaFleur and the entire team.
Think of it this way. winning this game takes a lot of pressure off because they don't have to worry about 0-2 staring at 0-3. I mean, that's back against the wall by definition. But winning this game when you now believe that you have a backup quarterback that can give you a chance to win, that's huge, because I think the decision for Matt LaFleur this week is going to be very interesting. If Jordan Love is great, then it's not interesting. He's going to play. But if he's borderline, if he's on the fence, and, oh, by the way, you got the Vikings looming after the Titans, a home game against the Vikings. You need to win that game. I think it's pretty tempting to maybe see if Malik Willis can go give you one more against his former team, by the way, that he's going to know really, really well. That's a really interesting decision to me that's shaping up, not just because they won today. And if you lose in Tennessee now, you're 1-2. Not a big deal. Packers started 1-2 in 2014. Aaron Rodgers said R-E-L-A-X. They ended the season pretty well. They have that option now because they won, but also because Malik Willis played quite well today, was efficient. He operated well. He was wise. He was smart. He was poised. It sets up a really interesting decision this week.
That is true, especially, I guess this is just my opinion. Like you said, if Jordan Love is shaky, I think that a game like this did prove that, like, okay, yeah, let's go with Malik Willis. Let's see what happens, because you look at the Titans and you say a turnover-prone team, lost to the Jets. Aaron Rodgers plays quarterback for them. I'm not sure if you all knew that he played for the Jets. Familiar name, right?
Aaron Rodgers was kind of just efficient today. I think it was like 18 of 30. He had 2 touchdowns, no picks, because he never throws picks. But it wasn't like he had a huge day. He was just kind of – he was efficient in that game, which is what we saw from Malik Willis today. Nothing extraordinary, just efficient. I don't know. I think that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be a fun game, and we'll be talking more about it throughout this week. But for now, for Ryan, Tom, I'm Dominique from Lambeau Field. Thank you all for watching.